In 1995, a pair of metallurgists figured out how to essentially write software code for steel.
Which is just, I mean, it sounds like science fiction,
But it
right?
totally does.
Yeah.
But they basically used like invisible carbon force fields to force a metal to self-assemble its own internal shock absorbers. So, welcome to the deep dive.
Glad you're joining us for this.
Yeah, today we are unpacking this foundational, honestly incredibly dense paper from the journal Materials, Science, and Technology. It's by researchers Elsie Chang and HKDH Badeshia.
Right, the title is Designing Low Carbon, Low Temperature Bainite.
Exactly. And, you know, if you track material science at all, you know, the ultimate goal of this research is something humanity has literally been chasing for
Oh,
centuries.
without a doubt. I mean, we are looking at the attempt to mathematically engineer a material that resolves the classic trade-off between yield strength and fracture toughness.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because to understand how these researchers are, you know, directing microscopic self-assembly, we really first need to look at the fundamental paradox they were trying to solve with this specific bainitic microstructure.
Right, because the paradox is everything here.
Right. So let's frame this through that classic engineering trade-off. I mean, don't strength and toughness just mean the exact same thing to most people?
Colloquially, yeah. People use them interchangeably all the time. But in standard metallurgy, achieving high yield strength while maintaining high fracture toughness is a notoriously brutal, like, zero-sum game.
Right. So if we optimize a metal entirely for yield strength, meaning its ability to resist plastic deformation under like massive steady loads, we typically end up with a highly crystalline high carbon structure, something like martensite.
Exactly. It's incredibly rigid.
And to use a visual we can all picture, I always think of it like a highly engineered pane of glass,
But
right?
it's a perfect analogy.
Like it can support tremendous static weight. But the moment a dynamic impact introduces a micro crack, it just shatters catastrophically.
Because it lacks fracture toughness. It just it cannot absorb energy at all.
Right. And then on the other end of the spectrum, optimizing for toughness gives you something closer to, I don't know, a rubber tire.
Yeah, a rubber tire is a great way to picture it. It deforms and absorbs immense impact energy without fracturing.
But it can't support a skyscraper.
Right, exactly. And what's fascinating here is that trying to achieve both being the glass and the tire simultaneously
Yeah.
is thermodynamically fighting nature.
Because normally you have to compromise.
Right, the traditional method is completely empirical. You know, you heat the metal, quench it to trap a hard phase, and then temper it to dial back the brittleness. You're constantly just sliding back and forth along that trade-off curve.
But Chang and Padeci's paper outlines a deterministic approach, right?
Yeah.
Like they wanted to break that inverse relationship entirely.
They did. And the secret they found lies in the microscopic mixing of two distinct crystallographic phases, specifically ferrite and austenite.
So we are taking two completely different physical phases of the material and forcing them to coexist.
Exactly. The paper specifically states that fine platelets of ferrite are intimately mixed with films of austenite.
Intimately mixed. Okay, so to visualize the actual topology of this for you guys listening, we can imagine looking at like a microscopic deck of cards.
I like that, a deck of cards.
Right, so the rigid load-bearing cards themselves, the components providing that uncompromising yield strength, the glass part of the analogy, those are the fine platelets of ferrite.
Spot on. But stacking rigid cards directly on top of each other leaves the whole structure completely vulnerable to rapid crack propagation.
Right, one crack and the whole stack shatters. So sandwiched between every single card acting as a thin, compliant, shock-absorbing layer, we have the films of austenite.
And that phrase you mentioned, intimately mixed from the text, that's crucial. It dictates a highly ordered alternating lattice topology.
So it's not just a random jumble of ingredients.
No, not at all. We aren't talking about precipitating random islands of austenite within a ferrite matrix. This alternating layer cake structure is what specifically arrests crack propagation.
How does it actually stop a crack, though?
Well, think about it. If a microscopic defect begins to run through the brittle ferrite, the propagating crack tip eventually hits that compliant austenite film.
Oh, I see.
Right. The austenite absorbs the energy of the crack, it blunts the tip, and effectively just stops the failure in its tracks. The ferrite bears the load, and the austenite prevents the catastrophic shatter.
Man, that structural arrangement makes perfect sense for arresting a crack. But that brings up a pretty massive fundamental manufacturing challenge, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Because if this alternating deck of cards structure is the absolute secret to the material's success, the physical dimensions of those layers have to be tightly controlled.
They have to be precise on a submicron level.
Right. We need to know exactly how thick the hard ferry plates are, and crucially, the exact thickness of those compliant austenite films sandwiched between them.
And according to the text, this film thickness isn't actually physically measured during the design phase. It is mathematically estimated by calculating the carbon diffusion field.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. Because when I read this, the mechanism reads like something out of electromagnetics.
It does sound like that, yeah.
Like, is this carbon diffusion field acting similarly to a magnetic force field?
It's a really good way to visualize it.
Because if you attempt to push the identical positive poles of two really powerful neodymium magnets together, the invisible magnetic field physically repels them.
Yeah.
You literally cannot force them to touch.
Right. You feel that physical pushback.
So the text suggests that the flexible austenite film thickness is dictated by assuming the carbon diffusion field around an existing plate of ferrite prevents the close approach of another parallel plate.
Yes. Now, the physics of that repulsion are driven by chemical potential rather than, you know, magnetism, but the functional result is identical.
So how does that chemical potential actually build up that force field?
Well, when a submicron platelet of ferrite begins to nucleate and grow, it possesses a crystalline structure that has almost zero solubility for carbon.
It basically rejects the carbon.
Exactly. As the ferrite lattice expands, it actively rejects carbon atoms, pushing them out of the way and forcing them to partition into the surrounding untransformed austenite phase.
Wow. So the ferrite is actively terraforming its immediate environment. It's creating a high carbon buffer zone right outside its borders.
That is exactly what it's doing. It creates a steep concentration gradient, a localized field of highly concentrated carbon immediately surrounding the new ferrite plate.
And because of the thermodynamics governing phase transformations, a new parallel plate of ferrite simply lacks the chemical driving force to nucleate inside that carbon-rich buffer zone, right?
Precisely. The local chemical potential is just too high. The carbon field physically pushes back against the transformation.
So another plate can't form there.
Right. And by calculating the thermodynamic limits of that specific carbon diffusion field, the researchers can determine exactly how far away the next ferrite plate is forced to form.
Oh, man. So that forced empty space, the gap left behind by the diffusion field, becomes the exact thickness of the crucial austenite film.
Exactly. The material is essentially self-assembling its own microscopic shock absorbers, using its rejected solute atoms to dictate the precise spacing.
That is incredible. But I want to push back on this saturation trap idea just a little bit.
Okay, go for it.
Because if you cram that much rejected carbon into a microscopic film of austenite, doesn't it become wildly unstable?
That is a very valid concern.
Right. Like, is this like a sponge that has soaked up so much water it physically cannot absorb another drop? Does the carbon get pushed into the austenite film until the concentration is so high that the chemical transformation just freezes in place?
That sponge analogy is fantastic, actually. And you've hit on the core mechanism of the paper.
But how does a supersaturated phase like that survive residual stress in a heavy-duty environment without just spontaneously transforming or precipitating out into brittle carbides?
Well, that pushback touches on the exact reason this paper focuses on low-temperature bainite. You are absolutely correct that supersaturated austenite is typically a metastable phase eager to resolve its internal energy.
Yeah, usually metastability is a huge liability.
Right. At higher temperatures, that trapped carbon would immediately precipitate out as cementite or other brittle carbides, which would completely destroy the fracture toughness we just worked so hard to engineer.
It would just shatter again.
Exactly. However, by running this transformation at very low temperatures, the kinetics, like the physical mobility of the atoms, are sluggish enough to suppress carbide precipitation entirely.
Oh, I get it. The carbon atoms physically don't have the thermal energy required to arrange themselves into carbides.
Precisely. The kinetics are frozen, but the thermodynamics hit a hard limit known as the T0 curve.
The T0 curve.
Yeah. As the ferrite rejects carbon into the austenite film, the carbon concentration rises until it reaches a specific thermodynamic threshold where the free energy of the ferrite and the austenite become perfectly equal.
And once they're equal?
Once that equilibrium is reached, the chemical driving force for any further transformation just drops to zero.
Wow.
The reaction doesn't just slow down, it thermodynamically flatlines. The austenite is trapped in a permanent state of retention.
Man, it's an incredibly elegant balancing act. The very act of the hard plate forming creates the exact chemical gradient required to permanently trap a compliant film right next to it.
It's brilliant.
And knowing the thermodynamics behind that saturation limit is what allows us to you know, pull back and look at the broader engineering horizons mentioned in the source text.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there.
We have a really fascinating list of context clues here from the source. We've got mathematical models, synchrotron, retained austenite, Thierry Phi, residual stress, nuclear irradiation, and mechanically alloyed.
That's a heavy-hitting list.
It really is. And I note the presence of the mathematical models tag. To me, that seems like the primary differentiator between modern material science and traditional metallurgy.
Oh, completely. We aren't just throwing ingredients into a furnace and hoping the mechanical properties work out anymore.
Right, because since they are estimating the film thickness based on these invisible carbon fields, they must be relying heavily on mathematical models to design this stuff before they ever physically make it.
Exactly. If we connect this to the bigger picture, the ability to mathematically model the T0 curve and the carbon diffusion fields means we can deterministically predict the microstructural topology.
Which is huge.
It is. The researchers can calculate the exact thickness of that retained austenite, which, by the way, is another key tag referring to those trapped compliant films we've been dissecting.
Okay, so retained austenite just means the films that got frozen in place.
Right. And by controlling the exact volume fraction and carbon concentration of the retained austenite through software models before ever melting a single ingot, engineers can tailor the steel for environments that demand literally zero margin for error.
Which perfectly explains the inclusion of the nuclear and irradiation tags.
Yes, exactly where my mind goes.
Because in a standard structural application, an off-the-shelf high-strength alloy might be sufficient, right? But a nuclear reactor environment introduces extreme variables.
Primarily intense neutron bombardment.
Right. And neutron irradiation physically displaces atoms within the metal lattice, creating microscopic voids and defects that accumulate over time.
And those radiation-induced defects lead to severe macroscopic swelling and catastrophic embrittlement.
The metal just falls apart.
Basically, yeah. A traditional alloy would eventually lose its fracture toughness entirely under that constant neutron bombardment.
However, the intimately mixed topology of our low-temperature bainite provides a massive advantage here, doesn't it?
It does. Think about the boundaries. The boundary between every single ferrite platelet and austenite film acts as an interfacial defect sink.
A defect sink.
Yeah, when neutron irradiation knocks atoms out of alignment, the incredibly high density of phase boundaries in this material absorbs and annihilates those defects, preventing them from clustering into macroscopic voids.
Oh, wow. So the alternating structure itself mitigates the internal damage from the radiation?
Exactly. The layers protect the whole.
That is wild. And beyond just absorbing radiation defects, this topology fundamentally changes how the metal responds to mechanical trauma, which points us directly to the Treepy and residual stress tag.
Right, the Treepy effect is one of the coolest parts of this.
Because I brought up earlier that supersaturated retained austenite is metastable phase, and usually metastability is a liability under stress.
Usually, yes.
But in this specific microarchitecture, that metastability is actually weaponized to fight crack propagation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Through the Treepy effect, which stands for transformation-induced plasticity.
Spot on. And this raises a really important question about how we define energy absorption.
Okay.
We previously discussed the austenite film acting like a compliant cushion that blunts a propagating crack tip.
Like the rubber tire.
Right. But the Treepy effect takes that a huge step further. Because that retained austenite is sitting right on the edge of thermodynamic instability, the sudden intense mechanical stress at the tip of a running crack provides the exact burst of energy required to kickstart a phase transformation.
Wait, really?
Yes. Right as the crack hits the film, that localized pocket of austenite instantly transforms into hard martensite.
So it's absorbing the destructive energy of the crack and using it as fuel to undergo a physical phase change.
Exactly. And furthermore, when austenite transforms into martensite, it undergoes a volumetric expansion.
The crystal structure literally swells up.
It literally swells. So not only does the film absorb the crack's energy, but it physically expands inside the microscopic gap, putting the crack tip under intense localized compression.
Oh my God. It actively pinches the crack shut.
Yes. The material uses the residual stress of the fracture against itself.
That is structural engineering at the atomic level. It's almost like it's fighting back.
It really is fighting back.
And, I mean, you don't validate a phenomenon like a microsecond tree transformation or the submicron thickness of a carbon diffusion field with a standard optical microscope.
No, you definitely need heavier machinery for that.
Right. Which brings us to the synchrotron tag. That highlights how these mathematical models are physically verified. A synchrotron is like a massive circular particle accelerator that generates brilliant high-energy X-ray beams, right?
Exactly. High-energy X-ray diffraction at a synchrotron facility is one of the only tools with the resolution required to measure these dynamic lattice changes in situ.
So they can watch it happen live.
Yeah. When researchers place a sample of this bainite in a synchrotron beamline while cooling it, they can measure the exact diffraction peaks of the atomic lattice in real time.
That is incredible.
They can physically observe the lattice parameters of the austenite expanding as it becomes enriched with the rejected carbon atoms from the growing ferrite plates.
So the synchrotron data basically validates that the mathematical models predicting the carbon diffusion fields are entirely accurate.
Yes. It closes the loop perfectly between the theoretical thermodynamic math and the physical reality of the manufactured metal.
Man. And then there's the mechanically alloyed tag, which also hints at how these advanced predictive models are pushing beyond standard melting and casting techniques, right?
Oh, for sure. Mechanical alloying is a whole different beast.
Because it involves aggressively milling elemental powders together in high-energy ball mills until they physically weld and fracture at the atomic level, right?
Right. You're creating custom alloys that bypass the limitations of traditional liquid metallurgy.
Because you can't just melt the stuff in a pot.
Exactly. You can introduce specific microstructural properties that would be completely impossible to achieve in a liquid melt, and then use these thermodynamic models to dictate how the phases precipitate out during consolidation.
Wow. So the integration of mechanical alloying with deterministic phase modeling allows for the mass production of materials that were, you know, previously restricted to just laboratory curiosities.
Yeah, we can design a massive industrial component, say a turbine shaft or a reactor vessel, that actually possesses the intricate self-assembling microarchitecture of our carbon diffusion model.
So what does this all mean? Let's take a step back and look at the synthesis of all these moving parts for you listening.
It's a lot to take in.
It is, but it's fascinating. We began with a highly technical 1995 paper on designing low-carbon, low-temperature bainite. And by unpacking the thermodynamics, we uncovered a microscopic architecture that completely defies our everyday understanding of solid metals.
We really aren't looking at a uniform block of steel here.
Right. We are looking at an intimately mixed composite of rigid ferrite plates and compliant austenite films. The deck of cards.
Right.
And the researchers managed to dictate the precise thickness of these submicron layers by modeling invisible carbon diffusion force fields, leveraging the T0 thermodynamic limit to trap supersaturated carbon in place.
The sponge that can't take any more water.
Exactly. They effectively engineered a saturation trap that permanently halts phase transformation, perfectly balancing the impossible trade-off between high yield strength and high fracture toughness.
And through phenomena like the Tri-P effect, the material dynamically utilizes residual stress to pinch microcracks shut,
creating a self-healing topology vital for high-stress environments like nuclear reactors.
It is a remarkable demonstration of transitioning from empirical observation to deterministic thermodynamic control.
It really is.
But there is a final thought I want to leave you with, building directly on the core mechanism we've explored today.
Oh, I love these. Lay it on us.
Well, we've discussed how these researchers estimate the film thickness by assuming the carbon concentration trap permanently halts the transformation, right?
Right. The T0 curve freezes it.
Exactly. The thermodynamics freeze the material in a static state, strong plates, tough films.
Yeah.
But if we project this mathematical modeling into the future, what happens if we find a way to dynamically alter that carbon diffusion field while the metal is actually deployed in the field?
Wait, while it's in use?
Yes. Could we theoretically engineer a smart bainite?
A smart bainite?
Yeah, a structural material equipped with a microscopic energetic feedback loop that senses an incoming impact and temporarily alters its own local chemical potential.
Oh, wow.
It could dynamically widen its compliant austenite layers milliseconds before a shockwave hits, and then instantly shift the carbon back to reharden its ferrite layers to bear a massive static load immediately afterward.
That's insane.
We have mastered the ability to freeze these microscopic layers in place using static thermodynamic limits. The next frontier of material science might be teaching them to dynamically adapt to their environment in real time.
A shape-shifting real-time metal manipulating its own phase boundaries based on shifting carbon fields. That completely redefines the concept of structural engineering.
It really changes how you look at a piece of steel, doesn't it?
It fundamentally changes the way you'll look at the silent microscopic activity happening inside the materials all around us.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the hidden thermodynamic architecture of our physical world. We will be back next time to extract the signal from another stack of critical research. Until then, keep questioning the mechanics of the systems you interact with every day.